The Home Affairs Minister, Peter Dutton, joined me a short time ago to discuss Friday's attack. Peter Dutton, thanks for joining AM. What's the latest on the condition with the two people who were injured?
Well, Sabra, fortunately people are improving, and obviously they weren't serious injuries to the extent that we saw inflicted upon the 74-year-old gentleman who tragically lost his life. But there will be many people impacted both physically and psychologically out of this event, and we wish all of those people a speedy recovery.
The attacker's passport was cancelled in 2015. Are you able to be explicit as to why it was cancelled?
No, but it's obvious that ASIO speaks to people on a regular basis, gathers intelligence in relation to a number of people of concern. This individual was certainly on that list, and there was enough and sufficient evidence for ASIO to recommend cancellation of the passport, and that that took place.
The authorities obviously deemed him as a risk travelling overseas. As you mentioned, his passport was cancelled. How is it that he was assessed as not being an ongoing risk at home?
Well, ASIO has 400-plus high-priority investigations. This is a significant issue for not only ASIO, but Victorian Police, the Australian Federal Police, and the police and ASIO have decisions to make on a daily basis about whether or not somebody is a present threat. There was no intelligence or advice to police or to ASIO that a threat was imminent, that an attack was about to be undertaken. And as we say, and as ASIO and Australian Federal Police have said for a long time, where you've got a soft target, that is a place of mass gathering, whether it's a shopping centre or a mall, wherever it might be, and you've got a low level of sophistication, so somebody grabbing a kitchen knife and picking up a couple of gas bottles, it's very hard unless you've got direct evidence. It is made even harder at the moment because many terrorists are communicating through encrypted messaging apps, and the agencies aren't able to access that information in a way that they would have through a text message or a telephone call even 5 or 6 years ago. So it's not an easy business that they're in, but they need to make calls. And I think we should be happy in the fact that we've got the best security and intelligence agencies in the world. They've been able to thwart 14 attempts so far, but they do rely on information from the community, and we need to further engage to make sure that that information is free-flowing to police and intelligence authorities.
240 people have had their passports cancelled. Would this case prompt a re-examination of who is under ongoing surveillance and whether their risk profile has changed?
Well, there will certainly be an ongoing reassessment of the way in which the agencies conduct their investigations. That's something that goes without saying. There are lessons to be learned from each of these cases. And the authorities, as I say, including ASIO, will make assessments based on the intelligence and the information that they have available to them at the time. I think the most important point here, though, is that we need further information from the community. In the 14 cases where we have been able to thwart a terrorist attack, it has been because either of good police work or intelligence gathering, but also because of tip-offs from the community. So somebody that notices a marked change in a work colleague, in a member of their family unit, and they've reported that information, and it has made a big difference.
You have appealed to the Islamic community and broader community to report behaviour that causes concern. Friends of the attacker have told The Guardian, Fairfax and the ABC that he suffered delusions and had substance abuse problems and was increasingly estranged from his family. How do you think those friends and family should have dealt with this behaviour?
Well, look, I don't want to comment in relation to what individual family members should have done in this case, but as a general comment, and this is not a criticism, it's an appeal, and as I say, in many cases, we have been able to receive information from somebody that sees a change in behaviour of an individual, whether it's through any of the indicators that you've just spoken of or others, and they've been able to provide that information to authorities, and we have been able to avert tragedy. So it's an appeal for further information to be provided, for there not to be a hesitation. It can be on the basis of anonymity that the information supplied, but it may be that you saved the life of that family member as well as innocent men, women and children within the community. And this is an ongoing problem, particularly where you've got, as I say, blackouts in terms of information gathering, because people are using encrypted messaging apps and they're guarding from authorities the planning of an attack, and particularly where you've got a low level of sophistication where there may not be any internet searches or planning or indicators otherwise that might lead authorities to intervene in a case. Where you've got, as I say, somebody picking up a kitchen knife and gas bottles and going down to a local place of gathering, it's very hard for the authorities to act on that, because unless they've got a tip-off from somebody that's intimately involved in that family group or within that community, then the police won't be with that information.
The local imam who knew this man when he was a young boy says that the community is doing everything it can and that the language by politicians hasn't been respectful. He's appealed to you to be a bit more respectful. How do you respond?
Well, we have very good engagement with the community. ASIO, the Australian Federal Police, Victorian Police in this case, have significant outreach into the community. But we need the help of the community. And I make the appeal on behalf of all Australians, and I don't care what community people come from, if you've got information about an imminent attack, or you know that somebody is being radicalised, or they're involved in serious organised criminal activity otherwise, it's incumbent upon you, regardless of your religion, race or background, to provide that information to the police.
Malcolm Turnbull says that you're one of those senior colleagues who should stand up and be accountable and explain to the nation why you wanted him out of the Prime Ministership. Will you do that?
Well, again, Sabra, I dealt with these matters at the time. I explained my actions, explained the logic behind why I thought we needed a leadership change. I have respect for Mr. Turnbull as a former Prime Minister. I want us to win the next election, and we lost 14 seats at the last election. We're behind in the polls now. Talking about ourselves is not going to fix the issue. We need to talk about the difference between Scott Morrison and Bill Shorten.
But he also says that you did act in a way that was damaging to both the government and the party and the nation.
Which is going to see house prices go down and rents go up and many other devastating impacts on the Australian economy. So let's talk about the things that are important to Australians, not ourselves. And if we do that, I believe very strongly that we can win the next election and stop Bill Shorten from becoming Prime Minister, which I think is essential for the future of our country.
Did you seriously weigh up that polling might go backwards with this change?
Well, again, Sabra, I dealt with all of those matters. I'm here to talk to you about what I think is one of the most important issues facing our country at the moment, that is national security. And I frankly spend my time worrying about how I can keep Australians safe, and whether that's through visa cancellation or supporting our intelligence and law enforcement officers. Frankly, that's what preoccupies my mind, and it will do for whilst ever I'm in this job.
OK, Mr. Dutton, thanks for joining AM.
Thanks, Sabra.
The Home Affairs Minister, Peter Dutton.